Blog Talk Radio. Hello and blessings. You have tuned in or surfed into Awakenings, one of the places of the converging flow where each and every one of us is coming from many different roads, traveled many different viewpoints, many different ways, but we converge in the center. This converging flow that we speak about is a universal flow. It's as we are following our own inner directive, our own inner guidance, as we are being spirit-led, we begin to live more synchronistically. We begin to live in cooperation and understanding, and we move out of our personality ego timing of past, present, and future into simultaneous timing, which is a flow of divine right timing. So in many ways, where we're in a flow of our own life, and perhaps many of you are awakening to this flow in your life, it sometimes seems a little scary for the little you, the ego personality. Those of you that have listened to Awakenings before, you understand that where it's not about eradicating the ego personality at all, but it's about retraining, if you will, with love and compassion and understanding that ego personality part of us so that it is a receiver, a receptacle for divine will, our expanded consciousness. This is part of awakening. You really cannot fully awaken unless you embrace all parts of you. In a sense, that's the meaning of a holographic universe, that every part is important. Every part comes from divine mind or God or the all that is. Think about this. You can't have it both ways. You can't say that everything is God and everything is one except for certain things. It's really kind of common sense. You can't say that a certain something is good and everything else is not good. Then we're not coming from that space and place of oneness. And so really, every piece, every part of life, of nature, of the all that is important, is needed, is necessary. Every piece, every person is a ray of light, is part of the prism of the all that is. And so in that sense, we can't say one thing is good and one thing is bad. It's all perfect, divine, and whole. We're all perfect, divine, and whole. And we're all awakening to this. This is part of the process. You know, it's almost what happened on some point through certain beliefs and socialization processes, people began to believe that parts of them were bad. And you can't get rid of parts of you. You can shift the energy. You can expand the energy. But you cannot, you can alter it, you can transmute it, but we're not getting rid of anything. So it's important to know that we're not talking about getting rid of parts of you, but embracing all parts, just as we embrace all parts of this universal idea that is us, this divine intelligence, this innate intelligence that is us, experiencing and expressing through us as us. So we're awakening to that truth within, or that God within, and understanding that we are meant to be here, no matter how we got here, no matter how bumpy, no matter what our daily experience is, whether we're up, we're down, we're depressed, we're happy, we're sad. Those states of being or consciousness or experiences, to me, are like driving through fog. Don't blame the fog. It's just weather. So the happenstances of the day is just like weather. And many times what we all go through that seems to be so, quote unquote, bad or unevolved is not just about learning lessons. It's about a gift to ourselves of deeper love and compassion, moving into self-love and self-acceptance, as well as being a gift for someone else. A lot of times we go through things and later we meet people that we're able to help, whether one-on-one or many people. So we're always being this divining and divine instrument. Divining meaning just like the pendulum or divining tool, we are guided by the subtle energy of the all that is to where we need to be most of service and have most fulfillment and abundance in our life. I want to read a passage from the Tao Te Ching. It's the Carol K. Anthony version. And to me, it kind of taps into what we were talking about yesterday. The passage is, we should also seek reacting to shock. We need to bend like the bamboo without becoming bent or broken through rigid resistance to the situation. Through non-resistance, the wind passes and we return to the upright. We all need to ask why we keep reacting after shock has passed. Do we like clinging to negative possibilities? Do we find solace in distrusting the universe or the cosmos, God? Are we tired of persevering and being tested, or impatient to enjoy the rewards of our discipline? Who is the one demanding the reward? Who's the one that's tired? Who's the one that hates being helpless or surrendering or embracing our situation? Who is the one that is not trusting? Who hates trusting the unknowable, the unknown? The root of impatience may be the fear that those we seek to influence will not find their way to truth. We do not give up on people. Many times people need space. And maybe we don't want to give them the time or space they need because that means we must wait. And our ego doesn't always like to wait. Our ego may also insinuate that in the end, our efforts will come to nothing and we will be cheated out of happiness. We need to remember that what we insist on is correct brings challenges. So if you're insisting on something in your life, that perhaps can bring challenges. What we need to do is to wait and see where the openings are. Go through where the openings are. So if a situation closes or it doesn't seem to be manifesting or coming through, we can go in a new direction or we can simply wait. There's another saying that when a fisherman can't go to sea, they mend nets. And I always say, well, if you can't mend nets or you've already mended your nets, then go have a cappuccino, go have a tea, go meet with a friend. Come to Awakenings on Blog Talk Radio. So what does this mean? I really want all of us to just embrace that lovely personality ego. That is part of divine mind also. But all of you, as you're awakening and also living more and more awake, you are just molding the ego to be more receptive to the divine element or the all-knowing element that you are. So it's really about a time of embracing, because who is the one that clings to negative possibilities? It's the ego mind or the personality self. But it's been trained to do that. So you're retraining. you know, this individual and collective awakenings is like a mini boot camp. You know, there's, for many, there's such an opening. The kundalini is rising. There's inside awareness, healing. People are feeling healing powers, feeling healing energy through their hands, knowing things about themselves and others. You know, their intuitive capabilities opening up, channeling. I mean, I've met people that all of a sudden couldn't draw. Now they can draw and paint. They're more artistic. A lot of people are going in a different direction than what they thought. The ego mind perhaps will be challenged by that because it says, oh my God, we haven't done this before. Oh my God, this doesn't seem right. Or, you know, my life is going to change now. And so there's some fear. And so just like we've been talking about, we talked about yesterday on yesterday's show, is to be flexible, like bamboo, have flexibility of the body as much as you can and flexibility of the mind so we're not locked in. I spoke a little bit, and I will touch back on it, of depression. Sometimes these changes happen so quickly that people get depressed and feel that it's too much to go on or even to have any movement in their life. So what I suggest in that case is that you move something, clear something out, even if it's a drawer. Move furniture around. Alter your pattern as much as you can. You know, if that's your sleep pattern, your routine, the way you walk to work or walk somewhere or walk to the store or drive to the store, ride your bike, somehow just alter what you're doing, and that will alter your energy pattern enough that new influences or new energy can come in. Very often when we're going through depression, when we're depressed, maybe we're holding something back or holding something down that wants to come through. Maybe a new way of being, a new way of expressing, a new direction. Sometimes it's also because we're giving out a lot of energy but not receiving enough back. So the challenge with that is to open to receive in some other directions, open to receive from other people. Reaching out, is it, you know, with a good friend or, you know, satsang, a connecting of like-minded individuals, you know, synagogue, mosque, church, whatever, some kind of way of connecting in with others, because we can't do it all alone. And many times, especially those that are, you know, all people, but let's say even just people that are in a, you know, healing capacity or going through challenges with friends or families, you may be giving a lot of energy out and not enough coming back to you, recycling back to you. And that begins to deplete the well. We have an inner well. Things like Reiki, energy work also help. Meditation helps also, so that you're funding your energy from source energy, so you begin to channel that energy to fund your personal energy. Because see, we all have a personal supply of energy, but once you learn how to tap into universal energy, you begin to feel more, not only awake, aware, you begin to feel more light energy. You begin to feel more vital. Your vitality comes back. Distance healing helps with that. But really, on an everyday level, a routine level, sounds simple, just altering your routine. Altering the routine will definitely do it. And because if you think about it, those of you that have been going through this, overwhelm or let's say depression, and think about it, you're probably doing the same thing over and over. You're probably sitting in the same chair, sitting in the same sofa, you know, lying down in the same side of the bed. You have the same routine. How you get up, what you do, is the same. So if you can just start varying that little by little, it's almost like creating a mini vortex of energy. You will find yourself re-energized and more inspired. And you'll find yourself opening the window, in a sense, to the universe to receive some kind of insight. Let's see, Kat's talking about on the chat, suffering from depression 2 times a year. Well, there is a type of depression that is by, there's clinical, which tends to go on for a very, very long time, or can be, you know, literally not being able to get out of bed. Now, that can also be caused by hormonal changes, dietary changes, things like thyroid deficiency, pituitary. So there are some physical and physiological things. Loss, if you recently went through loss, broke up with someone, illness, chronic illness, you tend to get depressed. I would say also, Little Light, and you're talking about this with chronic illnesses, physical illnesses, and you're right, and it feels overwhelming and you don't see options. That's when you just need to alter your routine a little bit. And then there are what we call situational depression, and that is when certain situations or circumstances, especially holidays, trigger. There's a trigger there, and it triggers in the subconscious mind a situation that hasn't been fully grieved, and then there is a depression there. Especially around birthdays or holidays, if you're not with somebody that you want to be, or you broke up, or you know, family split, or birthdays, a lot of times because people think, well, I should have been this far along in my life, or this didn't happen, or it triggers something that happened in the past that isn't resolved. So that's what we call situational, by the situation or the circumstance, or the holiday. And what I suggest in that case is that you know it's coming, so reach out to friend or family, email someone, get up in the morning and say, you know, I'm going to just alter my routine just a little bit. You know, I'm going to go buy myself a tea or get a coffee, or I'm going to go for a walk. You know, it may not completely abate it, but it may alleviate it. And Smoldering Embers is talking about being a chronic pain patient of 11 years. Not to push my CDs, but on the Meditation for Everyday Living, there is the pain management and meditation process, and that can be very helpful. I've used that a lot in my hypnotherapy practice, medical hypnosis, to alleviate or completely ameliorate pain. But let's talk about this for a second before we connect with our guests and we move to the next portion of Awakenings today. Whether it's emotional pain or physical pain, any pain that goes on too long, or any situation or stuck situation where we feel, as Little Light said, that you don't have any options or things are not resolving, that can be very challenging and very difficult. And yes, it wears one's spirit down. It wears your spiritual energy down. One thing that I find and I haven't had major illness, but I did go through this thyroid adrenal situation, Hashimoto's disease, or, you know, condition, which is turned around, by the way, which was not supposed to. But it was extremely frustrating, as well as brought a physical depression I've had mental depression, but physical depression when you can't get out of bed or you have to alter your routine and migraines, and I never had headaches, and obviously weight gain. I mean, there was just a lot of symptoms, other symptoms also that went with it. So I understand. Smoldering, that's why we come here. Yes. Me too. But what I found is to embrace it. And what I realized, and I kept, my mantra was, this condition is bringing something new for me. I may not like it. I'm not suggesting embracing doesn't mean that we like something, but we really say this is a form of me. In other words, when you go through these conditions, it is a form of your life for a certain period of time, and it may be a long period of time. I think somewhere around in this kind of mind-body thought, which I'm also trained in, obviously with the work that I do, there became a misnomer that that we have to always get rid of something or eradicate something, or that if we have something, it's bad, or we're not as evolved if we have these conditions or situations. And of course, the only person that thinks that is the ego personality, in the mind of God, in the land of spirit, in the mind of the soul or land of the soul, there's only experience and expression. Everything has a reason. So if you can embrace what's going on and get curious about it, well, I wonder why I'm going through this. I know for me, it gave me a whole different dimension of compassion and understanding for the people that I work with in my healing practice and as a counselor, and particularly in my hypnotherapy practice and bereavement practice. So I work with a lot of people going through a lot of loss and transition and change. And I'll be honest, I had a lot of compassion and understanding, but you really have compassion and understanding when you go through something. And as Smoldering Embers is speaking of, and Kat is speaking of, and Phoenix, and Little Light, when you see no options. So what became my challenge? What became my practice, my spiritual practice, was how can I have self-love and self-acceptance for Michelle now, the ego personality Michelle? How can I now have, you know, because I did all the right things, and I went to so many healthcare practitioners, you know, oh, you need to meditate, you need to do healing. I did everything, diet, nutrition, healing, you know, no wheat, you know, working out all the time. I was very healthy, you know, previously was a model, previously was a dancer. So everything was perfect and right in that way. So how can we embrace ourselves and have that self-love, that self-acceptance, that respect and honor for this part of our path, even though we perhaps don't like it or understand it? Because you will be a healer. You will be a divine healer for somebody next to you right now, right here, or down the road, just by what you've gone through. Because it doesn't, you know, what your physical body is going through, that condition, or sometimes even mental, emotional, is still divine, is still perfect. It's all divine reflections. There's no, if you have this particular situation, that's a divine reflection. And if you have reflection B, that's not divine. You know, if you're a certain height or weight, that's not divine. You know, if you're born with not, you know, two legs, that's not divine. No, it's all divine. But Little Light, there may not be a lesson. That's the one thing that I learned. Not everything about life is about lessons. Sometimes it's just about experience and expression, and it's just about living with something with a certain condition and embracing it. And many times, for me, that's when it began to change. So I would say, because if we're looking always at the lesson, then we're looking that something's wrong. So you may want to reframe it to get curious about what you're going through and see it as a certain condition. It's helping someone somewhere, and maybe it's even helping you on some level. You know, I mean, obviously if it's chronic, I mean, it can be being used as an excuse for something or a tool for something. But also sometimes it's about you embracing you. It's just another form of embracing you. I mean, we've all grown up to kind of in the society be perfectionists, and that certain things we read about, we need to be that way, or what we see on television or what we see in the media. You know, what does a spiritual person look like? You know, what does a yoga person? I had one time someone tell me, they were talking about someone and about yoga class and how the class was so good, and they said, oh yeah, and they have a yoga body. And I said, well, what's a yoga body? Oh, you know, very thin and tall and muscular. And I said, is that a yoga body? I said, yoga means union. So, and I said, and a lot of the yogis that I've seen and studied with when I was in India had huge bellies, little legs, but huge bellies, and a lot of them were chunky. So what is a yoga body? You see what I'm saying? So, ask yourself this, whether someone else is putting something on you right now, or your inner you, your inner dialogue, your inner critic is putting something on you, or the little kid that's hurt, ask yourself, is not everything all divine? Is not everything from the source of the all that is? Now, how can I use this? How can I get curious about this? What is this expression? What is this condition teaching me or showing me? What am I to be doing with this? How can I live with this? So once you embrace it, then you can begin to find ways to alter it. Or maybe you don't need the condition anymore. You evolve out of it. You move out of it. So I appreciate the emails from all of you. And I also really appreciate those of you that subscribe to Awakenings on iTunes. Apparently you can just go in the show description. There's a little icon for our RSS feed and then also iTunes, and just hit that and it takes you right there. So you support the show that way and never miss a segment, or put it in your MP3 player or keep it on your computer and replay it if you like to. So anyway, I just really appreciate the feedback and the questions and what you are all asking that you would like to cover. Today, along actually what we've been discussing, we have an author that I've heard a little bit about. I'm very, very intrigued to talk to him, very curious and very excited because of the concept of his book and what he's gone through. We're going to be talking with Steve Riles, the author of Drunk with Wonder, Awakening to the God Within. Isn't that what we're all doing? Oh, I love it. That's what this awakening is about. You know, it really is that transformative. So his book has been described as Conversations with God Meets What the Bleep Do We Know. So we're going to tune in here and bring him on, add him to our Converging Flow conference here, if you will. Hearing a little bit of the ring.
Hello.
Hello, Steve Riles.
Yes.
Hi, this is Michelle Mache with Awakenings.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Great to connect with you, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And likewise.
Yeah, and I'm very intrigued to hear a bit of your path and process and have you share that with all of the listeners and participants in Awakenings. It sounds like an amazing in-depth path, and that you brought consciousness to what you were going through, consciousness enough to write the book Drunk with Wonder, Awakening to the God Within. So again, welcome to you.
So, thank you. It's great to be here.
Tell us a little bit about how the beginning of your path, a little bit of a background for the listeners.
Okay. Well, I'm a baby boomer, child of the 60s, really. And my parents were married young, had me young. My mom was barely 20.
Mm-hmm.
And they came out of quite strict, kind of violent upbringings. Seemed normal at the time, I'm sure, but we would now call a lot of what they went through as pretty serious abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know any different, so being the oldest of what turned out to be five boys, I got that as well. And so being a very sensitive young man, I withdrew into a shell and developed a number of personality issues. And by the time I was 13, I was addicted to cigarettes and had continued to find ways to numb out my emotional pain.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I was 17, I was shooting drugs and living homeless in San Francisco.
Mm. Now, you said you got this as well from your parents. What do you mean, the addiction, or
what I received from them was, in though they were doing their best, I they passed on their wounds to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we tend to do generationally. If we are not able to heal the traumatic kinds of things that we're raised around, we tend to pass them on to our children. In other words, I don't believe there's ever been a documented case of a person being raised in a loving, healthy, safe, peaceful household who wakes up one day when they're a parent and decides to start kicking their kid or
mm-hmm.
beating on them or slapping them or screaming at them in public or calling them worthless piece of trash and so on and so forth,
mm-hmm. Sure.
Let alone abusing them sexually or so on and so forth. This is all from my research and my years in this world. That's all learned behavior.
Yes,
So what I learned was that at my core, there was something fundamentally broken in me
mm-hmm.
that was incapable of being fixed.
Mm-hmm. Or wrong, yeah. Yeah, I'm a counselor and a hypnotherapist, so we work with repatterning and as a therapist. Yes, you're right. There is the patterns do get passed on as well as you have the internally the capacity to want that similar emotional charge, right? That
we become convinced, and even though it's of course a tragic mistake, we become mm-hmm. convinced that that's who we are. That that's a it's a common thing to hear. I'm sure you've heard this. That if something to the effect of if you don't beat me, hit me, yell at me, you don't love me.
Yes, yes.
We confuse that that physical act with love.
Yes.
And so anyhow, I was just in a lot of emotional pain, and I got very good, like most of us do.
Mm-hmm.
I became a master at numbing myself out or distracting myself in one way or another. And so when I discovered drugs, I found that was a really incredibly good way to distract myself or numb myself out.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what I was, that's what I wound up with some help from a best friend pulling myself out of when I was barely 18. At least far enough out to avoid dying, because I was pretty much at that stage where if I'd had another shot of methadrine at the time, shooting speed, I would have passed on.
Mm-hmm.
And so my best friend intervened in, I don't think we really called it that very often then, it wasn't in the public eye, but did an intervention, and I never shot speed again, moved home, started to turn my life around, and within 3 weeks of that time, he was killed in a motorcycle accident.
Right around that time that you were getting help?
Well, 3 weeks later. 3 weeks after he did the intervention, and I moved back home.
Wow.
It was and to presence it in terms of the current context of what's going on in our country, in the world, and what I was dealing with emotionally, in April, this is 40 years ago, in April of 68, Martin Luther King was assassinated, and less than a month later, my best friend died on May 1st of 68, and then on, I think it was June 4th, Robert Kennedy was assassinated. So in roughly a 60-day period of time, I had these two people I really loved Carl as well, but I really, those two guys were really heroes of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've been talking so much about the election and my feelings and different things, family members, I'm sure you have too, and I really felt like when Kennedy was assassinated in 63, I was 13. Since that time, I really haven't thought about it that clearly, but I realize now that most of the big events that I remember in my whole life have been what I would call catastrophes on one level or another.
Mm.
And to have something like what happened last week with Barack getting elected was kind of the coolest thing I can think of in my whole life, in terms of a sense of hope and a sense of really turning a big page, turning a chapter in the life of our planet and the life of my dream of global community.
Mm-hmm. You know, Steve, as you're saying this, what I keep reflecting on, and have been as I saw, I sensed that he was going to get in when I saw a few weeks to maybe a month, but probably about 3-4 weeks, I saw the change of the types of people on TV that you'd have maybe two black, newscasters or politicians talking, or maybe a black and a woman and more comedy, and there's been more shows on TV that have specifically black or African American as the main person. Two comedy shows come to mind. I always look for that because you can see the films that come out, the shows that the networks take the time to put on will very much reflect the climate of the government. So I started seeing that, and I thought, wow, something is really shifting. And for me, it confirmed what all of us are doing in awakening and expanding to the higher consciousness, being more aware, more loving, more embracive, more tolerant ourselves and then with others, that we really are affecting change. You know?
Absolutely. And that's one of the points in looking back over this 40-year period, because I clearly remember, I was 18, remember Nixon going ahead of Humphrey and feeling what a catastrophe that was going to be for the country. And seeing this whole arc of my life around, and so many of our lives around, feeling disenfranchised
mm-hmm.
from politics. Back then I was counseling other kids against the draft.
Mm-hmm.
I was nearly drafted myself. I had friends who didn't make it back from Vietnam. I had other friends who made it back and then suicided out pretty soon thereafter because of their trauma, emotional trauma. And, I'm just like a whole lot of people, I think, in that I really dove back down into my comfort zone. I spent a little time in jail, and I was lobbying to get the Peace and Freedom Party on the ballot.
Now, were you in jail because demonstrating?
Actually, I was in jail because I was demonstrating, and the small town I was in was very upset with me for, helping start an underground paper and being very visible in a Republican stronghold. I was set up.
Wow, that's great. I mean, I always, when I hear these stories, I mean, I'm pretty brave, but I don't know about the jail. I love this. I mean, that's like, do you think when you're doing this, are you so on purpose with what you're doing and in this focus that you're not thinking about the jail and things like that? Does that come into your mind, or you just don't think about that at all?
I didn't think about it a lot. I wound up actually getting set up in one of those, sting kind of operations where somebody showed up and said, I really would like to buy this. It was just, it was an ounce of weed.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was like, I don't do that, and really pushed me to get it. And I finally did it as a so-called favor to a friend. And then that wound up being this woman was being told that if she did that, I would be, and I was picked up, then her boyfriend who was in jail would be released.
Mm.
It was one of those games that was played. And, they splashed my, anyhow, the point is that I didn't really think about it at that level. I was at a place in my life where I was willing to go to jail as opposed to getting drafted.
Mm-hmm.
I was very clear with my civil disobedience, and I did put in for to get an exemption based on my personal spiritual religious beliefs
mm-hmm.
for nonviolence. I was raised as a Unitarian, and because they had, I'd already been set up and run through this criminal situation, they decided they just wanted to make a man out of me, and so of course they would make
mm-hmm.
me 1A and immediately put me up for the draft. And so I was absolutely, I was terrified, of course. I didn't want to go to jail, and I didn't want to go to Canada, and there was no way I was going to be part of the Vietnam War. It just wasn't happening.
Mm-hmm.
That I would never have been able to live with myself at all. So, I did those things. It seemed like everybody around me was doing them then, so it didn't seem like I was way out on a limb in particular. I had been raised, at least from the fourth grade, to really, really embody my beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
The wonderful Gandhi quote, we must be the change we wish to see in the world.
Yeah.
And so from the time I was, the first time I gave a speech against the Vietnam War, or not a speech, but a talk to the adults at my Unitarian church in Seattle, I was 14, in 1964. And I had this really profound belief that we could, as a species, evolve beyond standing armies.
Mm.
And this whole crazy dance that we've been through in our infancy.
Mm-hmm.
I think Barbara Marx Hubbard is one of those who speaks of the evolutionary human, and we're kind of in the birth canal and have been for decades of coming through this process of fear-based, scarcity-based consciousness and awakening into the truth of who we really are. into an infinitely loving, infinitely abundant universe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a, you know, as Barbara talks about, it's a messy process. When you're in the birth canal, it's bloody and overwhelming, and the pressure is very intense, and it doesn't seem like it's ever going to end or there's any way out, and you can't even breathe, and then all of a sudden, Brock gets elected.
The dark...
something, you know, not that that's in any way that's going to end all of the, any of the problems or the issues that are going on. It's just that I think you know what I mean when I say there's an energy shift.
Oh, yeah. You could feel it. I don't know. You know, I can remember the 80s. I think that's when I first voted. But I don't remember any other president, you know, in my, you know, voting time and then what I read in the school books that people around the world celebrated that president getting elected and what it means, and which to me is you know, looking beyond color or gender, it is the representation of that, a symbol. There's a symbol of unification, diplomacy, tolerance, respect. You know, he's a symbol for that which we've been co-creating, that which we all have, many of us have been putting in motion. And you know what I find interesting also, Steve, is that, I mean, he won in landslides by the electoral vote, but by the general, he really didn't win by that much. It was only 6%. But it's usually that, what is it, that 8 to 10%, which may be getting less, of that percentile that are the progressives or have the first rung of that higher consciousness. You know, that's you know, usually the energy of the artists, the inventors, the trend senders that create that tipping point, right? It's, I think it's like a 10 percentile.
The cultural creatives.
Yes, the cultural creative is another way to. Oh yeah, cultural creatives is another way, but that's where that tipping point comes in. And I'm just wondering if it's now moving from a 10%, you know, maybe it's somewhere between the 6th percentile, the 10th percentile. Obviously, that critical mass was reached.
Yes, we talk about not that big a percentage win, but, you know, from a political perspective, Democrats haven't even won a plurality often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Clinton never won 50% of the vote in either election. And Barack's got about 53.
Mm.
And he won by about 7 million votes.
Mm-hmm.
Bush didn't win by 7 million votes in both of his elections put together.
Yeah, well, we don't know how he won.
So,
we want to really talk about that here.
In fact, he lost the popular vote in 2000, clearly.
Yeah.
And yes, of course, I think there are a lot of things to celebrate about the election. One of them is that just basically so many people turned up,
mm-hmm.
period. However they voted, that it galvanized us as a country in a way that we have not seen in our lifetimes or our parents' lifetimes at all. And they were just saying yesterday, San Francisco had more people turn out on a percentage basis than have in the history of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And
let me ask.
Of course.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you something because, you know, in perusing a bit of your book here, and also the comparison to the spiritual aspect, if you will, of your book, the idea that the conversations with God meets what the bleep do we know. So there is obviously the underpinning or threading through your book is all this, in this waking up, is this being spirit-led or that recognition of that God within. And as the God within, we are co-creators. In other words, and you said earlier, the Gandhi quote, be the change you want. Do you find that, because there's a lot of predictions out there, and I know my answer to it, I'm just curious of yours or what your reality or thought is on it, that have been very doom and gloom, you know, some of the Casey quotes and some of the Native American prophecies, on and on and on. Things are mutable. Do you find that because of our consciousness and the shifting that's happened?
Absolutely. Yeah, I believe that we co-create our universe on a moment-to-moment basis.
Mm, okay.
We co-create it, recreate it. if you've heard of the many worlds model or many universes model.
Oh, absolutely.
Then which is very credible from a cosmology perspective and a quantum physics perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I personally felt a profound, if you will, tectonic shift.
Mm-hmm.
When it was announced that he was elected, my wife and I were sitting here watching and burst into tears.
Definitely.
Like so many people did. And
I could feel it.
And I thought, this is okay, we're going in a different direction now.
Yeah.
And it was as clear as a bell to me. And, there's a part of me, not that I really, want to run it on a cynical level, but people who predict doom and gloom get a lot of attention.
Yeah.
Sell a lot of books.
That's right. What is that
but
about?
But if you how long have you been around? A few years. I've been around a few years. I can think back to the harmonic convergence in 87,
mm-hmm.
11-11 in 91, I believe it was. The
so going
whole,
on.
Sturm and Drang around the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's 2012, and I can give a personal guarantee that there will be something after 2012.
Oh.
There will be some other kind of, planetary alignment or galactic formation that will herald something. Mm-hmm. And
but to me, I get a lot of that same information. To me, they're misinterpreting it, because every time I've seen like harmonic convergence, we're in a converging flow right now, it's always about an evolutionary process, mentally, emotionally, physically, materially, as well as financially. And we go through this. There's an amazing author, Dwayne Elgin.
Sure, I've heard him speak. Yeah.
Oh, he's amazing. Yeah, I have too, and I've read that book three times. We're in dialogue. He's coming on the show at some point. He's just finishing writing two books. But I try to steer people in directions to say, look, these people are really in the forefront, and we've had these kinds of changes have been documented not just for hundreds of years, but thousands. That it's usually the self recreating, and you said this, co-creating in a sense, minute by minute, or recreating, is always, it seems to be for the greater good, or the most, life enhancement in the evolutionary process. So I'm not sure how these people twist it, unless it's just coming through their cloggy filters, fear filters.
Yeah, I think it has something to do with fear filters. I believe deeply that in each moment,
mm-hmm.
there is always a choice that can be made,
mm-hmm.
and that it isn't about when the stars align or when this happens or that happens, because that's taking our power outside of us and
mm-hmm.
handing it to some external force. And I don't counsel that. I counsel
mm-hmm.
that we continually bring our truth inside, and we live from the inside out rather than looking
mm-hmm.
to any external force or external date to say, okay, now it's okay to grow, or now it's safe
mm-hmm.
to grow, or now it's whatever, fill in the blank. I don't have a lot of patience with that, really.
Yeah.
It feels too much like people being victims.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's the stars' fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's, Mercury in retrograde's fault. Not that I don't run across lots of craziness when Mercury's
you
in
do.
Retrograde, but
yeah.
I can almost always tell, because I don't really keep track of when it's coming, but at some point I'll go, okay, my computer's
yeah.
not working, the phone's not working, this appointment just canceled. I wonder if Mercury's retrograding. Guaranteed it is.
It is.
That's funny.
Yeah.
But
I think it's just a piece. I think people misinterpret. Like 2012, I had somebody on yesterday's show, ask when are we what's going to happen in 2012, and when is the shift happening? Is it going to? And it's the thing is we've been in this shift of, up leveling. I call it like software, where our mindset, using more of our higher mind, a different type
mm-hmm.
of problem solving. And my understanding is by 2012 there will be different structures in place. You'll see more of this kind of thinking or reality in society and mainstream consciousness. Things like yoga, meditation, there'll be a restructuring of the financial realm, which is already happening. But I think where people make the mistake, they think it's because of the date it's the date is just another way of looking at it. In other words, I can use my GPS system to get someplace, or I can do MapQuest, or I can do Google, or I could call someone on my cell phone and say, give me directions, or I could print out a map on my printer. They're just different ways of reflecting the journey, but they don't determine. I think this is where people are making the error. They're thinking these things are determining what happens to us or determining the journey. It's just another way of reading it, you know, or looking at what's going on, interpreting, but it's not causing. It's not determining or causing what's happening to us. And I think that's what I'm hearing you saying. A lot of people say that this is happening because of this, which if I'm hearing you correctly, then you're saying that that's putting it outside of yourself.
Yeah, to use an old Werner Erhard-esque term, we're at cause.
Yes.
We're at cause.
Yeah, we are cause.
2012 isn't at cause.
Yes, yes.
You know, 11/11 wasn't at cause. The, you know, the Pleiadians are not at cause. We're not helpless victims waiting for a hero to ride in on a white horse and save us.
Yes.
You know, we need to take responsibility for creating the world of our dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And we do it by every choice we make in the moment, in each now moment. Because, of course, we never have a future. All we have is successive nows. Mm. And it is out of our dreams, of course, that we create our current moment experience.
Mm-hmm.
But we wouldn't want to confuse our dreams with being here now.
Mm-hmm.
And wait and, you know, kind of hang out and go, well, yeah, 2012, this shit's going to happen. Meanwhile, I'm going to get back and tube on and have another brew, you know?
But a lot of people are doing that, though. They're literally waiting for this something to happen.
Well, see, that's just, to me, this is the crux, Michelle, of this discussion is we're waiting for somebody else to do it, something else to do it, something outside of us that's going to take care of it for us, as opposed to doing the heavy lifting of taking responsibility for doing it ourselves, for creating it ourselves, for being the change ourselves now.
Now, what would you suggest to someone from your own life path and wisdom, you know, all the kind of inner research and outer research that you've done, for someone to start that change for themselves, to start doing it? And perhaps not to be overly focused on looking on the outside.
Well, I think, as I mentioned in my book, Drunk with Wonder, I believe that once we're past the point where someone is actually saying, yeah, I would like to try doing it different. You know, that, of course, that's the first issue. If people are still locked into their patterns and their stories and their comfort zone, you really can't even have this conversation. But once someone says, yeah, this isn't working, my first take is you need to develop being present. You need to develop your ability to discern and discern the difference between who you really are, which is the always present witness, and who you thought or were taught that you are, which is a series of stories and thoughts and ideas. And you are not any of those stories or thoughts or ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And to learn to distinguish between those two is where meditation comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, of course, many different forms of meditation. I meditate every day, and I believe deeply that I've gotten as far as I have, partially because of meditation, partially because I was finally able to quit drinking nearly 8 years ago. That was a huge piece.
Mm.
And let go of, that helped me to let go of more and more stories around who I thought I was, my limiting beliefs, and, you know, whatever we believe, we keep proving, because we, a belief is like a lens through which we look at the world.
Mm.
You know, the old adage that, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Mm.
So if you're convinced that you're no good, that you are worthless, that if people really knew you, they wouldn't like you or want to be with you, then you're going to keep proving that true by how you create your moment-to-moment experience.
Mm.
This is, you know, being God in form, we are masters at creating our moment-to-moment experience. And it's not as though when we figure it out, then we will start creating our experience. And we're not doing it now. We're victims now. Now, actually, you're creating every horrid thing that's ever happened to you at one level or another. If you didn't create the experience, you're definitely creating how you are with that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the, you know, to get very granular, that's the point that we all have control, is what we make the moment mean.
Mm-hmm. That's why I have a lot of, and again, we're talking about, and I do know as we expand more in the coming years that more truth will come through, and truth to me also is very common sense. It's commonsensical. It's very simple. Just what you're saying, we're always creating or co-creating. We cannot not create because we are
exactly
this, right. So
exactly.
That's what gets me with things like people wanting to manifest, and I always tell people manifesting is not a big deal. We're manifesting left and right. We're great manifestors. In fact, a lot of times we manifest what we don't want.
Exactly.
Right. It's
because that's what we focus on, right?
Yeah.
That's the law of attraction again.
Yeah. Well, and also that you manifest to the degree of your subconscious programming or your, like you said a minute ago, your beliefs. So until you handle your beliefs, your subconscious programming or your belief system, until you handle that, you're only going to manifest from that mindset. You know, if we get
Exactly, and you're going to do it unconsciously. That's the whole point of wanting for people to develop some form of mindfulness exercise where people are able to get present with their breath and begin to notice, oh, this is a story, oh, it's a thought, oh, it's an idea, as opposed to it's truth or it's received wisdom or, you know, whatever you might think.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you know, as a meta-belief, the fear-based, scarcity-based model, you know, that's a major meta-belief that our planetary culture inculcates all of us with, with the media and with the various stories that we have, that there's a fixed pie, and in order for you to get more, somebody else has to get less.
Yes, and
that there just isn't enough for everybody to live in peace and plenty and prosperity, and that there's something morally repugnant about the idea that everybody could have enough, because isn't that socialism, you know, and isn't socialism evil, or, you know, that whole idea that we've had this tremendous run in this country of how unfettered, unregulated what is called capitalism, what is really actually greed on parade and three-year-olds on parade, is somehow going to create enough for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
There is enough for everyone if the people who are hoarding stop hoarding. The truth is today there's enough to feed, clothe, shelter, house, and educate every person on this planet. Every person on this planet. It's how we allocate our resources that determines whether everyone is taken care of, whether we care for each other as brothers and sisters, as spiritual beings in physical bodies, choosing to come from love rather than from fear.
Good point. There is this abundance. You know, it's interesting you're talking about meditation. I teach meditation at a Agape Spiritual Center, and actually also have a book on it, Meditation
in Los Angeles?
Yeah.
Oh, Joanne and I, we were there and saw Michael last year. We're part of the Mendocino Center for Spiritual Living.
Oh, wonderful.
Joanne's a licensed practitioner, and I'm in my third year of studies in that particular spiritual model. So we actually came and had our, you know, spiritual sojourn last summer of 2007 with Michael, and got to be up close and personal to that amazing place.
Wonderful.
An old friend of ours, Robert Fry, used to do Sufi dancing there, and told us wonderful stories about that place. And it was
Talk about converging flow. I mean, everybody from everywhere and all over, and everyone is embraced, and you know, everyone's a part of this, their own personal and collective evolution process, and sharing that. But I had a thought, because it hit me one time, and I even brought it into one of my classes, my meditation classes. Remember the musical chairs,
sure.
That game?
Sure.
It hit me one day, and I brought it in as an exercise, a practice, that when the students came in, we did play musical chairs, but what I did is I put more than enough chairs. We did it with, everyone had a, chair, and they went around, and people were stunned, and you could see the anxiety and the fear as the game was going, because they didn't notice that there was enough. And so we opened it up to discussion, and we played, and I didn't take away chairs, and in fact, sometimes I would add chairs. And what we all came away with was the idea that very early on, like you were just saying, we're inculcated with this. We're taught that there's not enough. Even in musical chairs, what happens is you're taught that there's not enough chairs, and you have to kind of fight or get anxious about it, push someone out of the way. You have to strategize for that certain chair, because then the music stops. You don't want to be left out of the game. And so what I said to everyone, I said, the truth is that there's enough chairs, but there's actually more than enough chairs. There's always a chair. I said, we have chairs in the next room, and we have chairs in the storage rooms. There's chairs everywhere.
Right.
So it kind of hit me when you were saying that. I wanted to relay that story, that if we would all start coming from that place, that knowing that there is enough, and like you say, not to hoard.
Exactly. Half the food on this planet that's grown is wasted because we've got poor transportation and poor storage. Mm. And we have governments that rule their countries through fear based on scarcity, which includes the scarcity of food.
Mm. So how would you say for a person, an individual person, to move past this? And did you always have this knowing that there was more than enough, or was there a process that brought you to this realization?
Oh my gosh, yes, definitely a process. I would love to be able to say that I had it all figured out at a young age. I had glimpses through my use of psychedelics and so on as a young person, but I couldn't make any sense of it. I remember Ram Dass talking about the difference between meditation and taking LSD is the difference between rowing a boat across the Atlantic and taking a rocket. You will get to the same place, but you may not be ready for it if on the one hand, on the other, you will have had plenty of time to prepare. So yes, I've had so many different adventures in my life. One of them was, coming from the streets of San Francisco, literally living homeless and addicted. And I wound up turning my life around, and several years later, I wound up graduating from UC Berkeley with an English degree, with mm-hmm. honors. And I moved into a very conventional life, really. Sales job and a company car, and I got married and helped raise stepchildren, and did that whole kind of thing. But I also, I required a more and more profound drinking issue. And I kept going between these dreams of my youth and these visions that I had, really kind of shamanic visions, and I got very, very scared. I got really terrified when first King and then Kennedy were assassinated. My friend was killed right in the middle of that. And I just, and people, other icons of our lives, Hendrix and Morrison and
Janis Joplin,
yeah. We're all, it's like, oh, I get it, if I stick my neck too far out, it's just going to get chopped off. And I got very scared. And so I went and pulled my neck in and pretended to be straight, pretended to do the kind of the straight world, start making money. Show my dad that, oh, yeah, I can make money. I can, make more money than you can, and mm-hmm. Do it in and have more fun doing it. And I eventually wound up on paper anyhow as a millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And had all these resources, two homes and toys and vacations and all this stuff. I mean, just stuff. And that's when I eventually got, oh, there is no upper limit to how much stuff you can have. And that there's always more stuff and there's always more money. And if you're chasing that one, there's no end. It's and I finally got, and it took me a while, but I finally got that if we're not enough inside, it doesn't matter how much we have on the outside. It's never going to be enough. There's still going to be that hole. So when I woke up from my drinking, I had been desperately trying to keep an internet business that we'd started in 96 alive. And when I quit drinking in 2001, I woke up and looked around and said, oh, this isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going deeper and deeper into debt. I'm never going to get this paid off. This is insane. I think I'll go bankrupt now. So I went from, you know, at one point being a millionaire on paper, and a few years later I was bankrupt. And mm-hmm. so I've lived in that world of having nothing, having lots of things, and going back to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And only this time I'm really clear that by nothing, I have good, healthy, organic food to eat. I live in a beautiful 40-acre land that my wife owns off the grid up in the mountains in Northern California, and have friends and family and work that's meaningful to me. And how much I have in my bank account doesn't have anything to do with how I feel about who I am and what my worth is. But I had to go through that entire series of processes in order to really fully understand that, you know, that this is all a chimera, that this whole consumer society is a chimera. But I also really got it that when someone is caught up in that game,
mm-hmm.
really caught up in it, someone is just starting up that ladder, coming out of a third world situation, developing country situation, and they're finally looking at having some of this when they've felt deprived, then people like me coming along and says, well, you know, that's just all material stuff. And, you know, it's useless to talk to at that level because they need to understand it for themselves, not have somebody tell them. And so that's one of the issues that we face as a planetary culture as we as we develop the whole planet. How do we avoid, you know, what China's been doing, for example, which is opening a new coal plant every week?
Yeah.
You know, so we can take a million cars off the road that are highly polluting in this country, but in that same, in a year, that same year, China puts out so many new coal plants that, you know, it's way more carbon dioxide than we've taken off, even working very hard.
Mm-hmm.
So how do, so we can't do it in isolation. We've got to do it as a planetary community, which means we've got to go after a really high, clear vision with a detailed set of goals that we can agree on as a planetary community. And I go back to talking about Barack and my hopes that he gets this. Every fiber in my being at this point tells me that he does.
Yes.
And that he is willing to step up onto the planetary stage and engage the whole world in a conversation about, you know, how do we do this for our children and our children's children,
mm-hmm.
so that we feel good about the planet and the condition of the planet that we are going to leave to our children and grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an almost 3-year-old granddaughter, and I think about her a lot, and, you know, makes it very personal.
Yeah, well, 7 generations we need to be thinking.
Yes.
I think, too, also, you know, the pendulum swung in a certain direction. And again, just like us, the world, the earth, the universe, we as a collective is self-regulating. This homeostasis wants to come in, this balancing point.
Uh-huh.
And part of what I'm hearing you saying, it's really about balance and consciousness because, you know, like you said, the third world country coming up perhaps needs to focus on some of these things. You know, they always say right now that there's a shift with the East and the West, that the West is becoming more Eastern and the East is becoming more Western. the missing piece I see, and see what you think about this, is that they're doing it in the old way, the old model. And reminds me of what you were saying about mindfulness, that is, if all of us were mindful, you know, as well as the government structures and systems, we wouldn't say, oh, let me do it how Johnny did it or Mary did it, or we wouldn't be saying, let me do it how we did it 20 years ago or America did it. We'd say, how do we need to do this growth? We're reflecting where we're at right now. And I think you have to be mindful, right? You have to be, you almost have to do
well, enormously. I mean, you know, look at the number of automobiles that are coming, into use in India and China, and is another example. And who can deny people's, you know, let me put it this way, how useless it is to deny people who are becoming newly enfranchised and have more resources available to spend on these kinds of things. They've seen this on, you know, our worldwide satellite TV and all this stuff, and that's making it as far as they're concerned. We don't have models that are showing other ways of making it. So if we're going to do that, let's at least do it from a context of really getting our act together around how we produce our energy. Because when we talk about infinite abundance, There is an essentially infinite abundance of energy, clean energy.
Mm-hmm.
We simply have to have the will to make the choices that allow that energy to be used. I mean, my wife and I are blessed to have been given the resources to be able to recently upgrade our solar system.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in a position now that when a good, reliable hybrid plug-in hybrid is available, that's on our wish list, so that we can plug that into our solar panels, drive back and forth to town, and so on a regular doing errands and seeing our granddaughter and, you know, that kind of thing, we will be able to completely eliminate fossil fuels from what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, it's not, well, you can't have cars. It's let's co-create a culture where renewable sources of energy are used to power those cars, non-polluting from start to finish. But there's never a place in the line of creating and delivering the energy where carbon dioxide is created or non-renewable resources are used.
Well, we have a comment in the chat. I want to see what you think about this. That awareness, you know, that balance and consciousness, that awareness comes through example. So in a sense, don't these other countries perhaps they have to see an example of this because they're just coming up the ladder? You know, like you said, it's very easy once you're kind of at the top to look around and say, well, it doesn't matter that much, you know, or, you know, I could live with thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions, or, you know, I'm just content, you know, without that also. You know, that's a whole process. But if you've never had that, it's very hard to say that. You know, human nature almost wants to say if you haven't had it yet, there's a striving, right?
Yeah, I want to make it so clear that I'm aware of how fortunate I am and the lessons that I have learned. I've had the good fortune to have the opportunity to learn those lessons. I did not get it how empty that material lifestyle is until I lived it and then left it behind, and now I don't care. But I can say I don't care because I've had it. And you see, the thing that many people don't realize is that there are consequences to every choice.
Yeah.
And the consequences, when I started making, my family started making a lot of money, I started to have these, you know, what do I do with it? You know, where do I invest it? Where is it safe? Old, you know, friends that I had when I was a kid who heard that I was making a lot of money came and literally found ways to borrow money and then not pay it back and make comments like, well, you're rich, you know, you can
afford it. You don't need it, yeah.
You know, and so their trust issues came up and, you know, all these other things that you'd never think about if you've never been there. Begin to come into play. And I think it is about example, that exemplary leadership is the way to go. And I think that's another reason not only for us or many of us in this country to celebrate our new president, but why it was so popular around the world, because at this point, for whatever reason, the United States is still seen as a leader and people still look to us. And I think I speak for a lot of us when I say that we've been doing a really poor job of leading in the last 8 years especially, and that we've been acting, at least the way the country's been acting, the way the executive branch has been acting, has been that of spoiled children, spoiled bullies, with the all of the, you know, the presence and maturity of, you know, kindergarten, maybe that far. And to turn that completely around and have us show by our example that we're willing to invest in vast infrastructure improvements that include radically moving away from carbon-based fuels, leading the way in those kinds of ways, as well as leading the way in terms of how do we truly integrate and celebrate the diversity of all our people, and really make it an make it as an opportunity for literally anyone.
And now, Steve, do you think this is possible for each of us to do this individually, like by our individual choices and living more consciously?
I think it's the only way.
Okay.
Because you know, we collectively are composed of all of us individually.
Mm-hmm.
And we each need, you know, the saying goes, pick up an extra piece of trash. We mm-hmm. each need to be willing to do what we can. I mean, is there anybody listening to us today, Michelle, who has yet to put fluorescent bulbs in their house?
Mm.
I mean, is there really anybody who is still insisting on driving the big gas guzzlers and not making conscious choices? I mean, they've just lifted the cap on a federal tax credit for putting in solar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was a $2,000 or $3,000 cap for a tax credit, no matter how much you spent. Now it's a 30% tax credit of whatever you spend. So if you spend $100,000 to put in an elaborate solar system, you get $30,000 back right away in a tax credit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's and you've got cities like Berkeley here in Northern California that have decided to start offering no-cost loans to homeowners, including you know, people who own rental houses or rental houses and apartment buildings, to put solar in, and then their monthly payment will be what they had been spending in power.
Hmm. So it is getting in the infrastructure, you know.
Oh, it's about our infrastructure desperately needs to be rebuilt, and attitude. We just, as a state, just passed a bond measure to begin construction of a high-speed rail line between San Francisco, the Bay Area, and I think as far as Sacramento, maybe, and L.A. Mm-hmm. I mean, I took the train. We took the train for Christmas down south last year, and, you know, it was 12 hours of bone-rattling craziness, as much as a train buff as I am. And when this built out, we'd be able to get on this train in San Francisco and get off in L.A. 2.5 hours later. And it will be powered by electricity. There won't be any diesel, you know, used. And this is, you know, this is the kind of forward thinking. You probably know who Van Jones is.
Oh yeah.
And his whole push to create millions of green jobs and educate a lot of our young people in the cities and give them really meaningful work to do and really create a restorative environment in this country where it's, you know, to Barack saying, yes, we can, as opposed to, oh, no, that's impossible, or that would cost too much money, or, you know, we talk about how, oh, it costs too much money, solar's too expensive because oil's cheaper, but only if you don't value our country, if you don't value our natural resources, if you don't value the environment.
And ourselves, right.
You know, little details like that. If you value those, then you've got a guy named, I think it was Amory Lovins, wrote Natural Capitalism,
mm-hmm.
and he talks about if you put on the accounting and the books, if you add in what we're doing to the environment, then all of a sudden, a whole lot of the ideas that seem pie in the sky or tree hugger style suddenly become eminently sensible.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you count what happens to our spaceship Earth, as Bucky Fuller called it, you've got to do it different. You've got to do it radically different. And what's crazy is that what to do is already, we already know.
Yeah.
It's been a lack of will at the leadership level. Mm-hmm. You know, but when you got a Texas oil man in the White House, what do you expect?
Yeah, well, there's, yeah. And also, the building, you know, the connections. Now, we have a question or a comment here that someone, Little Light, is making in the chat that she's heard of, and she's even experienced herself, some kind of negativity when very close to electric towers. Is there any of that energy when you cover your roof in solar panels and it feeds the power back to the power company? So is there, would you, let's say you have those panels, I would say not, because the solar panels is getting the electricity from solar.
Well, when you're talking about big power lines, big transmission lines,
mm-hmm.
you're talking about vast rivers of power. When you're talking about solar panels on your roof, you're talking about a trickle.
Okay.
You know, you're talking about a scale. You know, you're a transmission line will produce, will be running 100,000, you know, a million times more power than you'll get off of a solar set of solar panels. And from what I've seen and the research I've seen about, you know, cell phones, for example,
mm-hmm.
if you use a Bluetooth or any kind of another headset
mm-hmm.
and get the phone away from your head by even 2 feet, it looks like you're going to be fine. And so here, you know, it's up on your roof. It's not in your living room. Or it can go on a garage, or it can, you know, there's all kinds of things you can do, but there will be less power coming to you than there would be if there was lines running through your backyard from house to house. There's a lot more power in those lines than there ever would be. And if you're running solar, you're actually putting power back out into the grid.
Mm-hmm.
So if you in order to avoid any electrical lines, you need to move very far out in the country and live on kerosene, and which is also very polluting and very hard on the lungs.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying, though, that there is less to worry about, but there is some, obviously, exposure. We actually have a caller on the line. Let me see who's... Hi, 647.
Hi, how's it going?
Hi, you're on the air with the Wake. Steve Riles.
It's the mama in the house. How's it going?
Hi.
Hi.
So do you have a question?
So what are we talking
comment?
About quickly? I'll just give my 2 cents.
Okay, your 2 cents. Who are we speaking with?
Stephanie.
Stephanie. Hi, Stephanie.
From Canada.
From Canada.
North Country.
Okay.
Province of Ontario.
Okay.
Top of the mountain. Anyways, go on.
Okay. So did you just tune in to listen?
Yes. So just fill me in because you only got 8 minutes, and I don't want to waste your time.
Oh, okay. Well, you called in, so.
Yeah, I know. I just wanted to hear it, so I can. Because I always have an opinion about something.
You
it's
do.
Always good.
Okay.
So don't worry about it.
Why don't you listen a little more, and then you can stay on the
Ask
air.
Ask me a question.
You can stay on the line, and then if we're going to continue talking. Then if you have a question,
Point,
just
I'll
let
just
me know.
Speak. Okay.
Yeah. Sounds
Go
good.
Go ahead.
Okay. All righty. All right, Steve. Yeah, so there is, I didn't realize that there is some exposure in a sense, but you're saying minimal.
Well, I mean, when you say some exposure, anytime you're moving electrons
mm-hmm.
From one place to another, which is the nature of electricity, you've got some exposure. The question is whether that exposure is going to be detrimental to your health.
Mm-hmm.
We've had really poorly insulated electrical lines and circuits for generations now.
Mm-hmm.
They first started wiring cities 125 or 30 years ago. And we're doing a much better job of insulating and have been for a long time. If there was some kind of a serious problem, you'd see it show up statistically. We would not be having the radically expanded lifespan that we have if we'd had some kind of a really horrible exposure going on. We'd see it. You know, it wouldn't be just, oh, I'm afraid that this might happen. We would actually see something happening. You know, a lot of people, especially younger people, don't realize that 100 years ago, the average life expectancy in this country was 50.
Yeah.
And now it's nearly 80. For women, I think it's over 80.
Yeah.
That's happened in 100 years.
60's the new 50. 50's the new 40.
Boy, I tell you.
I think I've seen 60-year-olds that the 60 is the new 40. I'm not kidding. I have seen, I mean, the vitality that we have now is just amazing.
Yes, I think back on my grandparents and how they were showing up in the world at 50 and 55, and I, you know, now I'm almost 59, my wife's 61, one of my best friends is 67, and, you know, we're still rocking out and having and enjoying life and showing up in completely different ways than was considered acceptable a generation or two ago. We have got, you know, we have a fellow, I think, 68, who made it to the top of Mount Everest, and that was considered physically impossible a generation ago.
And what do you think that is? Do you think it's mindset? I mean, earlier we talked about beliefs. Do you think it's the altering of beliefs? Because it seems generations ago, the belief was that you kind of started constricting or contracting.
Well, because you know, it was only a generation or two before that where, on average, you died at 50.
Mm.
You know, so of course, people lived longer than that, and a lot of people didn't live that long. So, yeah, I think back on the great story about the first time that the four-minute mile was broken in terms of running.
Mm-hmm.
It was considered impossible to run faster than a mile faster than 4 minutes.
Mm.
And when it happened, and it flashed around the world that it had happened, within a very short period of time, and I'm speaking of weeks, it was broken repeatedly,
mm-hmm.
over and over again.
Mm.
Oh, you can do that. Oh, okay, I'll go do that.
So so almost like saying that, yes, you can, kind of shift the belief. And if you see one, it almost reminds me of that the 100th monkey, you know, Rupert Sheldrake talking about morphogenic field. Once something morphs in the resonant field, you know, even if we don't see it, we kind of know it. It goes into Spiritual Pilot in the chat was talking earlier about the collective DNA or universal DNA. It's almost like it's now there's been a mutation, there's been a shift that says it can be done.
Exactly. And I think that we're going to see that happen more and more often. I if you really look at the, some people have called it long time. But if you step back from our rapid flow from generation to generation and look back to the Buddha, look back to Jesus, look back to Muhammad, different huge towering luminous lights that showed up in the world and demonstrated through their lives a completely different way of being, especially in the context of the world they found themselves in.
Mm.
And we've seen, you know, many masters come and go, Buddhists and Hindu masters and non-dual awareness masters, and we have more and more of them in the world today as contemporaries, as current teachers, and more people are, some people call it popping or waking up,
mm-hmm.
At least occasionally, and that makes it easier for the next person. We're adding to the morphogenic field or to the planetary grid what it's like to live from this different place. And the more of us who awaken, the easier it is for the next person to awaken. And instead of becoming a really rare phenomenon, it becomes, I don't know that I want to call it ordinary, but it becomes normal.
Yeah.
It becomes
the new normal.
The way we are as we evolve past our fear-based origins.
Yeah, the new normal. See, that's my contention also with people talk, and I don't know if you've heard this term, but the crystals and the indigos. I honestly, and I used to teach school years ago,
mm-hmm.
I saw just as aware just the psychic children. I grew up psychically, you know, from four on, and my family knew. I don't think that there's more. I think that it's just what you said, the field. We have to remember who we are and be empowered and look around and go, yes, I helped co-create this by me making these life-enhancing changes, by me recognizing that God within that I'm co-creating. We are making a difference. So, of course, there's going to be less filtering or less censoring of people with these gifts, but everyone has these gifts. It's just people that perhaps came on the planet, you know, earlier on, they were, the gifts a lot of times were snuffed out, you know. But,
well, yes, I think that's very true. That was beaten out of us.
Yes.
You know.
Physically, mentally, or emotionally, you're right, it was beaten out, you know.
Or there was an attempt to.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you touch a very sensitive soul and one who's deeply wounded,
mm-hmm,
because of they've been made wrong for that sensitivity at one level or another,
mm-hmm,
or they've been taken advantage of, you will find this really amazing light. I do I've done a lot of work, volunteer work with teens, and I just, you know, you find the most wounded kid in the room, and if you can get to know them a little bit and listen to their story a little bit, they're the ones, you know, the ones who are acting out the most, the bullies, the loudest, the most obnoxious, turn out to be the kids, inevitably, every single time, turn out to be the ones who have been, you know, raped by their father or their mother or their uncle, or, you know, had ritual abuse, or, you know, these incredible stories of survival.
Yeah.
And they're doing the best they can to deal with this overwhelming emotional baggage that winds up leaking out on everyone they know because they don't have any models, mm-hmm, for how to deal with their emotions in a healthy way.
Yeah. What is that saying, where there's the most darkness, there is the potential for the most light? You know, you walk into a small dark closet and you turn on the light, there's only so much light. But if you go into a huge warehouse that's dark and you turn on the light, there's more light. So I think to me, part of what I'm also hearing you say, Steve, is that it really is awakening, that God within, it's awakening to our own empowerment, that, you know, that we have that light. Even if we've been through a lot of, you know, challenges or dark times. I mean, you speak of this, you know, in your book, in your path, your process. But now look at all that that was grist for all this wonderful wisdom, knowing, and part of what I hear from you, compassion.
Yes, I realize, and I think this is one of a sign of anyone who's waking up, is that they stop talking about their past in terms of being a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And these, you know, it's my father's fault, it's whatever, because I spent decades, you know, blaming my father for my life.
Mm-hmm.
And start looking at every experience as a gift, mm-hmm, and realizing that if we're really happy and grateful for where we are today, then we wouldn't change anything, because if we change something, we would not be who we are today. We'd be somebody else.
Yeah.
And to really finally come to peace with that. You know, I'm reminded in what you were just saying of the really famous Marianne Williamson quote from A Return to Love. What most frightens us is our light, not our darkness.
Yeah. Oh, I got goosebumps when you said that. That is so true. You know, and many of us have been conditioned to not step forward or be seen. And so, yes, it is frightening to now wake up and realize that you are a light, and people want to hear you or be around you or hang out with you or want to hear what you have to say. There can be that shrinking back, you know.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's like you want to, you know, it's time to start stepping up and taking responsibility to co-create the future of our dreams. And that means that we stop blaming other people or other situations. You know, some form of the statement, if only you were different, I'd be fine.
Yeah.
And just take responsibility for our moment-to-moment experience. And if something isn't going the way we want, to make a change rather than, and do it internally, to take care of it ourselves rather than depending on or expecting someone else to do it for us, whether it's the government or the church or our friends or our parents or our spouse or our kids. It's not about them. It's about us.
Mm.
It's about us stepping up and taking on the responsibility of creating the life of our dreams,
mm.
of waking up and saying yes to life rather than no.
Beautifully put. Well, on that note, Steve, that we're winding out.
Okay.
This has been wonderful connecting and conversing with you, and I so appreciate you being on Awakenings and sharing a bit of your path and process and inspiring us to step forward. I like what you're saying. It's time. That's the waking up process, is to step forward. That's the next piece or the next step.
Well, thanks, Michelle, and I just want to presence real quickly that if those of you are listening are interested in my book, Drunk with Wonder, Awakening to the God Within, you can go to my website, drunkwithwonder.com, and order toll-free or through the internet. I'm also on Amazon, and I've even got a really great, if I do say so myself,
yeah.
audio version of the book that's available on iTunes and audible.com. And if you go to my homepage on drunkwithwonder.com, you can also sign up for my free monthly newsletter, which we continue these kinds of conversations over the months and years.
Wonderful. Yeah, I've been putting it in the chat.
Great.
Your website, drunkwithwonder.com. And then also on the segment page, there is a link to Amazon so everyone can become and swirl in that Dionysic energy, get into that being drunk with your own wonder and awakening to the God within. I think that's where we're at. I love that. I think that's where it is connecting to that wonder of life itself and ourselves. And as you said so aptly earlier, Steve, awakening to the God within.
Well, thank you so much for having me on today, Michelle. I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation.
Yes, me also. And everyone in the chat and online, thank you so much for tuning in to Awakenings, one of the places of the converging flow. And all of you know Wednesdays and Fridays, 12 to 1:30 p.m. Pacific, Awakenings is aired at this time. You can also subscribe to Awakenings via iTunes, actually by going to iTunes or just in the description page of Awakenings, just hitting that little icon. Your comments, emails, as always, are appreciated. And thank you so much for walking these steps with me and joining in the awakening flow. And again, Steve Rylas, thank you so much.
Thank you. And Michelle, and thank you for doing what you do. You're really making an important contribution to the evolution of consciousness on this planet. And I just really want to appreciate you.
Oh, thank you so much. Everyone that comes here, you know, I've had other guests actually even come on and they just notice a difference. And I'm not taking, you know, claim to that. I think it's just the people that come here really are consciously on a path and, you know, want to share and really want to hear. They're open, really open to learning and then sharing their own experience and that which they've learned here and elsewhere. So all the way around, it's wonderful.
Okay.
All righty. So take good care, everyone. Until next time, keep awake.
Blessings.
Remember, you are the light. You are the love. You are that which you have been looking for. You are the message. You are the messenger. You are the Messiah. You are the Guru, the inner Guru. Within you, you are the teacher. You are love, light, and wisdom. And you are awakening to the truth of who you are and sharing this truth in wondrous ways. You're awakening up to the God within and co-creating the life you dreamed of. You're now co-creating the life have dreamed of, all happening easily with grace and ease. So until next time, shine your light and keep awake.